Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Every Wednesday at this time, Greg Cosell of NFL Films joins us exclusively on the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's right here on 104.5 The Zone. He's presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty, THGTN.com, the website if you're interested in making a move to a new home in 2019, THGTN.com. Greg, how are you?
Jonathan, what's going on?
You sound much better this week, by the way.
Yeah, I finally turned the corner. You know, my doctor told me I can start getting back to the gym, so, you know, it's my life will become normal, thank God.
Yeah, well, for sure, especially a busy season for you with the draft coming up. But we want to turn our attention to free agency and some of the moves that the Titans have made to begin our conversation this week. And we started quarterback, where the Titans made a trade. John Robinson acquires Ryan Tannehill. As you assess where they are right now at quarterback with Marcus Mariota going into that option year and Ryan Tannehill on a one-year contract, what do you make of the move? And how do you assess Tannehill as the backup quarterback right now to Marcus Mariota?
Well, they've got two quarterbacks who are top 10 draft choices right now. Both arguably have not lived up to their draft selection. When you evaluate a quarterback, Jonathan, the first thing you have to do is evaluate the quarterback as an isolated player, separate from the team. You have to start with traits, attributes, characteristics. What the team does is it presents numbers for a quarterback, but that doesn't speak to what the quarterback actually is. And when you look at where Marcus Mariota is at this point in his career, there's been an inconsistency in his game that starts with his mechanics. And whether they can be fixed or not, I happen to know that the previous coordinator, Matt LaFleur, worked hard on that, and he struggled with that. So Mariota will end up being the starter, but the organization will have a decision to make based on how he performs this year as to what they want to do. So now they have insurance with another number one pick in Ryan Tannehill, who arguably has also not played up to his draft selection, but has had quality moments in the league, just as Mariota has had. Now, keep in mind, when did John Robinson come in?
2016.
So he did not draft Mariota.
No, he did.
He inherited Mariota and LaJuan.
He was a part of Tampa Bay when they drafted Jameis Winston and came the next year.
Right. So John Robinson and Mike Vrabel don't have any particular ties to Marcus Mariota. And Vrabel, obviously, being schooled somewhat by Bill Belichick, you know, I think that this then becomes an important year. There's no particular ties with either the GM or the head coach to Marcus Mariota. So he's going to have to play probably his best football this year to get another contract with the Titans. And one issue that we've seen with Mariota, of course, is durability, because you've got to be on the field. So this is a big year for Marcus Mariota, and my guess is they'll probably change the offense a bit. They'll feature Derrick Henry. He'll be the starting point. He'll be the foundation of the offense. That's why they've made changes on the offensive line, with, I'm sure, more to come. And Mariota will end up being more of a, I hate to use the word game manager, but they're not going to build the offense around Marcus Mariota.
Greg, you mentioned Ryan Tannehill, and we've talked so much about Mariota. I want to focus just on Tannehill for this question. You said he's had quality moments in this league at times. Let's kind of ceiling and floor this thing with Ryan Tannehill. When he's having those quality moments, what is he doing well? What are those traits that have worked for him? And when he's not playing well, what has the problem been?
Tannehill is a guy that, you know, throws the ball pretty well. I would say he probably throws it a little better than Mariota. He's had moments where he's been real firm in the pocket. I remember looking at him. You know, there was a time when it looked like he was on his way to being a really, really good quarterback. And he had moments where he looked down the gun barrel, as we say, was really tough in the pocket, made some really strong intermediate throws. But he's another guy that's just been very inconsistent with his accuracy, been very inconsistent with his decision-making. Obviously, when they brought Adam Gase in, because he had the reputation for being a really good quarterback coach and a really good designer of offense, I think more was expected. It didn't work out. Tannehill is another player, Chad, that has struggled to stay on the field. There's durability issues. You're dealing with a quarterback that clearly has talent. But it always seems as if something's been missing, both in his accuracy and in his decision-making. And obviously, those are two critical things. I mean, you know, keep in mind, I heard Sean Payton talk about quarterback play, I think it was at the Combine, and he basically talked about three things that are paramount to him. He talked about accuracy, and that is critical. And accuracy is not just putting it near a receiver, it's precise ball placement. Then he talked about toughness in the pocket. And then he talked about movement within the pocket, a far more important trait than running out of the pocket. So, you know, I think you're dealing with two quarterbacks that have probably struggled a bit in all three of those areas.
Greg Cosell with us, presented by the Huffaker Group. Tannehill could move a bit better prior to the knee injury, right? I mean, he's not the same quarterback when it comes to mobility anymore. At least that's been my take.
No, and again, but he still has the ability at times to run the read option and the zone read and quarterback run concepts just as Marcus Mariota does. Theoretically, they're similar quarterbacks in that the game plan does not have to be different. We'll see how this goes, but I think clearly that there's a sense that Mariota is he's got to perform this year. You know, he's not in a cushy situation, let's put it that way.
Let's go around the league a bit. Green Bay goes with the two Smiths. They replace Matthews and Perry with Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith on the open market. Tell us just your assessment of the two players, because we were discussing both Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith here prior to the start of free agency. Za'Darius a little bit larger than Preston, but it seems like Preston, coming from Washington, has a bit more upside with the ceiling, and just reading up on him.
Yeah, two SEC guys.
Yes.
I really like both of them. I remember watching them coming out. As I recall, with Za'Darius Smith, he came out at the same time, I believe, as Bud Dupree. So he was not talked about as much, but I thought that he was a really good prospect. And I think he's still a really good potential player. Preston Smith, I remember, he was Mississippi State, if I believe. And I, another guy that had the size, good movement. I thought he could develop into a really, really good pass rusher. Obviously, people judge pass rush by number of sacks. But I think there's a lot to work with both those guys. They'll be the starting edge players in Green Bay. And that'll be an upgrade from what they've had in the last couple of years, particularly since Clay Matthews has not been the same player he was 4, 5, 6 years ago.
What can Matthews bring to L.A. with the Rams defense? How do you think they'll use him there?
To me, and maybe I'm wrong, you know, if Mike Pettine was listening, I'm sure he's not. I'm sure he has other things to do right now. But maybe I'd be wrong. But I think if you play Clay Matthews 20 snaps a game and line him up as an edge rusher, not inside, still as an edge rusher, I think you can get value from him. You know, again, far from me to say anything negative about Dom Capers, who career-wise has been an unbelievable defensive coordinator in this league. But, you know, I think when you started to move Matthews inside and move him around, to me, he was a dynamic edge pass rusher who had tremendous bend and flexibility. And I think, you know, 20 snaps a game, he could probably still do that.
Greg, I know you've been going through all the film, preparing for next month's NFL draft. And we need to discuss the defensive back you've been evaluating over on West End here in Nashville at Vandy. Juwan Williams caught your attention. Why do you like him so much?
Oh, see, to me, well, first of all, he's over 6'3". He weighed 211. Now, people are going to look at his 40-yard dash at the combine. I know he ran better at his pro day. I think he was about 4.55, if I'm not mistaken.
It sounds about right, yes.
Yeah. But for me, big corners, you look at someone like Richard Sherman, who played in the league for years, and we'll get to Williams in a sec, but, you know, my guess is Sherman was not a 4-4 guy. But Williams is to me, he projects to the NFL as a prototypical press corner. He's got size, he's got length, he's got physicality, he's got pretty smooth movement traits. I thought his play speed was much faster than his time speed. To me, he fits the profile of the big boundary corner who can match up man-to-man on the X receiver. And that's what the game has become in many ways. X receivers, meaning the single receiver to the boundary, the short side of the field. Those receivers have become critical. Much like, let's say, Xavier Rhodes of the Vikings. And I thought there was a comparison to be made there between Williams and Rhodes. Rhodes ran a faster 40 time coming out of college, but Williams had a faster 10-yard split. And a lot of people look at the 10-yard split because the game is not played in 40-yard dash stretches. It's played in much shorter bursts, and Williams had a faster 10-yard split. I think he can become a really good man-to-man press boundary corner. I like him a lot, and I'm going to feature him in one of our matchup shows. We do two NFL matchup shows on the draft, and I'm going to feature Williams.
Well, and I'm just assuming that you had the chance to notice Juwan Williams while you're evaluating some of the wide receivers at Ole Miss.
Oh, yeah.
And so you get to see him in the physical tone he sets. He can almost at times, because Chad and I have had the opportunity to call some of his high school games prior to him going to Vandy. And even then, he was known as being a defensive player who could be too aggressive at times, too physical at times on the outside. Do you notice that from him at all?
Not really. And again, I think you can, I'd rather a guy be too aggressive in that situation.
Well, it's not a bad thing necessarily.
And you can coach that out of him, whereas guys who are not aggressive, you know, it's a DNA thing. You know, I think aggression is one of those things that's in a guy's DNA. It's like concentration. If you have to say to a guy, well, you're going to need to concentrate today in the game, that's a problem. I think aggression is one of those things. Guys are either really aggressive or guys are not. It's like a quarterback. Quarterbacks either stand in the pocket and deliver the football when they're about to get hit, or they fall away. I don't know if you can teach that. So I think in Williams' case, I'd rather have him be more aggressive and kind of try to work that out of him as opposed to being less aggressive. But I think he has a chance to be a really, really good player.
DK Metcalf, I'm assuming, was not playing in the game that you watched.
No, he went up against Brown and DeMarcus Lodge.
What do you think about Brown overall as a receiver, and how did Williams match up with him in your evaluation?
I thought Williams did really, really well. I mean, there were three catches made in that game when Williams was in press man, because I made a note of this. I was sort of charting it. The first was a 25 back shoulder throw to Brown in which Williams missed his jam, and therefore he was in recovery mode right away. And that was the case right there with Brown. But Brown is a really interesting player, and I thought what helped him tremendously, because in his case, Jonathan, I went back. With Brown, I watched him last summer from 2017 because he had huge numbers in 2017. And then I watched him again this year, his 2018 tape. And in 2017, he was almost exclusively a slot receiver. Well, this year, as you may know, over the last 5-6 games, they moved him outside. And I think that really, really helped him because he did well outside. And given his size, and he ran better than a lot of people thought, even though he's not a burner per se. Like, I wouldn't put him in the Julio Jones category. He's not that kind of player. But I think that there's a savvy to his route running. The fact that he played on the outside later in the season and showed the ability to win on the outside is a big plus as you project him to the NFL, because he clearly has a ton of experience inside where I think he can be really good with his route running savvy, his hands, and his competitive toughness.
Now, he's not DK Metcalf, but
no.
a player who, and I'm talking about someone else. I'll set this up for you. The guy I'm going to ask about physically looks the part, but not quite to the level of DK Metcalf. N'Keal Harry out of Arizona State, Greg. When you watch him on film, what jumps out to you?
Yeah, I guess, and you know me, Chad, this is all film-based. You know, I don't know these players. I wasn't as excited about him on film as I guess many are. Now, he certainly presents the size, hands, body control, contested catch profile that a lot of people view as the staple for ex-ISO receivers in the NFL. You know, as we mentioned a moment ago, that ex-receiver, the single receiver to the boundary. Now, he also played a ton inside. He played as the inside slot to trips when there were three receivers to one side. And I think that could be a good spot for him, because one thing that stood out to me watching Harry is he struggled, Chad, to separate and win versus college corners in man coverage. So I'm thinking to myself, if he struggled to do that versus college corners, is he going to do that versus NFL corners? Now, that's a hard question to answer. Now, keep in mind that the NFL game has changed. There's a lot more quick game concepts where you can, you have rubs, picks, create the quick throw to an open receiver. And Harry does have very good run after catch.
I'm going to stick with receiver for a second. Have you had a chance to watch Hakeem Butler from Iowa State?
Oh, I love Hakeem Butler. In fact, I just put that out on Twitter today. I put out my evaluation of Butler because I, again, I'm a tough guy to evaluate and say a guy's my number one because, for instance, you can't compare Hakeem Butler to Marquise Brown from Oklahoma. So, you know, they're two different players. So it's hard for me to compare, but I love Hakeem Butler. Now, to me, he is your absolute classic X receiver in the NFL. He's big. There's not many guys over 6'5 who weigh close to 230 who run under a 4.5 40. I mean, that the size 40 time combination is extremely rare. And he's going to be a really difficult matchup versus NFL corners who usually range from 5'11 to 6'1. As I said a moment ago, the NFL has become a league in which that ex-ISO boundary receiver is critical to passing games. I think Butler, his movement was fluid for a man that size. I really like Hakeem Butler. You know, to me, it's always hard to say, but if I probably had to pick a wide receiver one, he might be the guy.
And you mentioned fluid as a runner, maybe just as important as the 40 time, and we can discuss DK Metcalf in this same discussion, is the ability for those big receivers to sink their hips and get in and out of breaks. How is Butler at that compared to Metcalf when you evaluate him on film?
I think Butler's way better than that. Metcalf can't do that. Metcalf is a vertical, explosive player. He ran by off-coverage corners in the SEC. He's an explosive machine, but he's not a get-it-in-out-of-your-breaks receiver at this point. Now, whether he will be or not, you know, there's a lot of people who believe when receivers are built like he is that, you know, you can't really have that kind of lateral quickness and agility and change of direction. So who knows the answer to that for sure. But Butler definitely, you know, has the ability to do that more so than Metcalf does at this point in time. But Metcalf is more purely explosive, just running vertically.
And he has had, going back to Butler, some big-time touchdown catches. A 57- or 58-yarder against Oklahoma comes to mind. He has
two of them. Yeah, okay. He had two of them against Oklahoma, a 51-yarder and a 57-yarder.
And then a long one against Texas Tech.
Yeah, had a 48-yarder against Texas Tech where he defeated press coverage and showed the ability to what we call frame the ball really effectively. I really like Hakeem Butler. You know, he's and I knew not one thing about him before I started watching him, which I love when that's the case. I love when it's sort of virgin territory. The only guy I knew about was David Montgomery, and I'd seen him a little bit on TV, not much, but his name had been bandied about. Butler I knew zero about before I started watching him.
Final thing for you as we switch gears, go back to free agency. There are some organizations where you pair a logo with a position, and you could probably do that with Baltimore, the Ravens, and its safety. The latest is Earl Thomas.
Right.
Tell us your thoughts on Thomas in that defense, how they will use him within that defense, and the fact that they really need him when you look around the division at what the opposing offenses will be trying to do. And funny enough, I'm thinking about Cleveland all of a sudden and the matchups that Baltimore will have now.
Oh, for sure. Well, Earl Thomas, and he's not going to be any different at this point in his career, is your classic post safety, your classic single high free safety. And now he fits perfectly with Baltimore because Tony Jefferson's the other safety, and he's your classic box safety. He's a strong safety. So now they will have two safeties that are not really interchangeable. It's almost like when it was Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas. in Seattle. Now, that doesn't mean Tony Jefferson will never play a snap of single high, but for the most part, Earl single high, Jefferson's in the box. So that's the way they'll play. Now, Earl Thomas, at his best, and we don't know where he stands, but at his best, he was also outstanding playing downhill with speed and explosion and filling in, you know, being an alley player in the run game. You know, where he stands now, can't answer that, but that's what they have now. They have two clearly defined safeties. They've got a post safety and they've got a box safety.
Greg Cosell, follow him on Twitter at Greg Cosell, where he has been tweeting out some of his evaluations, both good and bad, on players in this draft. I love this, Greg, because you give the full report. You put it right out there for people to use, and then they're actually comparing your assessment of players to their own grades. I've seen a lot of the draft analysts do this on Twitter.
And you know me, Jonathan, I have zero agenda. I'm just sitting in my room watching tape. That's all, you know, so I don't know these players. This is all based on just tape study.
I know, and I'm using that to credit you, because I think a lot of people will measure their own take and see how it compares to yours and the way you assess the film. And it shows the work and effort that you put into it, for sure.
Well, I appreciate that.
You got it. We'll talk soon, okay?
All right, Jonathan. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Greg Cosell has been our guest, presented by the Huffaker Group of Keller Williams Realty.
Titans fans, mark your calendars for Thursday, April 18th. John McClain presents In the Evening with Amy Adams Strunk. Join Team Hutton 104.5 for an exclusive night with the controlling owner of your Tennessee Titans 1 week before the NFL Draft. Thursday, April 18th at the Bell Tower on 4th Avenue. All proceeds benefit the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. John McClain presents An Evening with Amy Adams Strunk. Tickets are available now at 104.5thezone.com.